Welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. It means a lot to me that you take the time out of your day to hear what I have to say. Before we get started, just want to remind you, you can go to covertnerd.net for all the different ways you can get in touch with me. You can subscribe to the podcast. We're pretty much on every app out there that you can imagine. If there is one that isn't, let me know. I'll do what I can to get the podcast on that app that you're using. You can also click on the app and find the show notes for this episode. And you can get in touch with me. You can get in touch with Jeff. You can also go to covertnerd.net to find out the different ways to get in touch with me, make suggestions, and see past episodes and show notes. So without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up with Jeff and talk about wonky 80s movies. We are back finally. It's been a while since Jeff's been on, but we are going to dive into some more 80s nostalgia with Jeff from the Make Eternia Great Again podcast. Jeff, it's been way too long.
It has been way too long. There's been a lot going on, that's for sure. We are in the throes of Pandemicville still. So it sucks because I haven't been able to see you in person forever either.
I know. But we could still go back in time and grab our Swatch watches and our pump up our Reeboks and go back to the 80s.
Yes.
Did you have Reeboks? Please. Reebok pumps?
I never had them. Nope, I never did. A bunch of friends had them, but I never did.
Me too. I had to wonder from afar because my parents would never buy me those things. I think even in the 80s went back for $80, $90.
Yeah, I was going to say they're pretty expensive.
That'd be like $200 now.
Yeah, I was lucky if I got some like BK Knights.
Exactly. Like some Converse or something. And
that's right. Yeah, I think I was wearing Pro Wings as a kid. So
We should. Oh, hey, that's an idea. We should do.
That's a good one.
80s knockoff clothes or clothing. That's brands. Right.
Or shoes or whatever. Yeah. Man, let's take a trip in the Half Price store.
Yes, exactly. The Walmart specials and like, no, sorry. I want Nike's. Man, mom. That could be no, fun. You get Pro Wings.
You get Pro Wings. Sorry. But so, mom, kids are making fun of me. Good.
Good. It's rub good for
dirt
you.
On it. It's good for you. That's right.
So we're going to talk 80s movies, but which we have done before, but this time we're going to get into maybe the wonky or obscure 80s movies that we watched that we wanted to kind of dive back into, Jeff. And we found some humdingers, I think, that I think the listener will enjoy, and I'm sure I didn't look up all of these, but I know a lot of these you can go and find on streaming services. Heck, I think one was on YouTube. You can watch the whole thing for free.
Yeah. A lot of them you can. Yeah.
If nothing else, just watch the trailer and you'll get a good idea of how kind of wonky they were and obscure.
That's kind of like what I loved about when we were talking about doing this was like, I remember our conversation. This was a while ago. I remember us saying, like, remember going to Blockbuster or whatever movie theater or movie rental place that you had and just going up and down those like B movie aisles. Mm-hmm. And they just had the craziest like covers on them and stuff, you know, but they marketed so well with just the, you know, those weird, you know, covers and stuff. I'm like, all right, it's only a dollar. I'm going to get this one, you know, and then you'd watch be like, what the heck?
Or
some of these were like on like the, you know, like local here or whatever. We had like KPTM, like Fox 42, and it was like a UHF channel. Yeah. And they would have like, it was like, I forget what they called it. It was like something Sunday Blockbuster or something like that. Uh-huh. And then so like every Sunday afternoon from like 2 to 4, they would have some wonky movie on, you know, and you'd be like, well, I have four channels, so this is better than watching Homes for Sale or something like that.
Yeah. So the Blockbuster was a little bit misleading in that line when they would say
yes, without a doubt.
Because some of our picks were definitely not Blockbusters.
No.
Or these would be on constant reruns on TBS.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
But you're right. That brings up a good point. The marketing genius of those guys that made or gals that made these covers and they were able to get you to spend, like you said, the dollar to rent these things.
Exactly. And
you flip it over and it still looks good. And then you pop it in the VCR and 5 minutes later, you're like, what did I just rent?
Well, I'm invested now.
Yeah.
I got the popcorn.
I spent the dollar.
I just got to roll with it.
I just got to roll. Like you just said, I only have 3-4 other channels. So it's this it's Days of Our Lives on TV or something. I don't know.
Yep. For sure. Yep.
Let's dive right in and get into the weird and obscure wonky movies of the 80s. My first pick is Fortress from 1985, which is an Australian movie. And they showed it, HBO actually funded it. And so it was on HBO, but then it was released in movie theaters in Australia. And it is a story about, it's based on a true story, loosely, of course. Hollywood's always loosely, but this is actually not Hollywood. This is Australia. But anyway, based on a story of a school teacher that has this little country school out in the middle of Australia, and they actually got kidnapped by some weirdos and held them for ransom. So these guys kidnapped the teacher and their kids, and then they got away. So, okay. That's the whole premise. They get away, but the bad guys are chasing them, and they haul up in this cave, rocky area and build a fortress. They put up all these pit traps with spikes in the bottom, these trip wires that bring little blades down. And so they know the bad guys are coming after them. They have to take their stand and get rid of the bad guys so they can get free. So this is based on the 1972 Faraday School kidnapping of a teacher and her class by the guys were Edwin John Eastwood and Robert Clyde Boland. Eastwood, okay. Now this is funny, or not funny, this is interesting. Eastwood, one of the bad guys, later escaped from prison, repeated the same crime with another teacher in her class in 1977. And then the Faraday kidnapping was in turn a real life copycat crime based on a scene by a Clint Eastwood movie in a Dirty Harry movie in 1971. So this whole thing is really connected. So it's a copycat of a 1971 movie scene that took place in 1972. And then the guy did it again in 1977. I was like, wow, this whole story is bonkers. They held up the teacher and the kids for a $1 million ransom. The government claimed it would pay the ransom. The victims escaped though, and were captured and they captured the guys and convicted them. And the guy, I think, let me see here. So the guy was in prison, strangled a convicted rapist in what was considered a self-defense. And eventually he was released after serving his sentence.
Wow.
How bonkers is that?
That is bonkers. Goodness. It's stories like that, that you're like, they were high when they wrote that script, like for sure.
This is a movie, but then you look at the movie is bonkers, but then you read, and I just found this out just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. That this is all loosely based on what actually happened. The real story is almost more bonkers than the real movie itself.
But that's not so.
But yeah. So I saw this, I think probably in 86. I didn't see it because a friend of mine had HBO. We didn't have HBO growing up. We lived in the country, but he lived in town and had HBO. And we actually sat down and watched this with his parents. This is a very gruesome movie. I remember we did an episode, Jeff, many years ago on 80s movies, and I mentioned in there that Predator was the first rated R movie I saw. Yes. But now that I think about it, this was actually the first rated R movie I saw. I was a little blown away by it's very graphic because, and I should preface that all of our picks are going to have spoilers. So, but you know. These are 35 years old or whatever.
That's right.
If you haven't seen it.
You probably haven't seen them. Maybe you have, but yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, the end, they capture the final last guy, comes storming into the cave that they are all kind of cooped up in. and they surround him and they just start beating him with sticks and start stabbing him and impaling him with these sharp sticks. And it doesn't show it, but there's just shows the guy's face and you can see the blood just kind of spurting all over his face.
Oh man.
And holy then, smokes. So then they progress about a week or so later after they're all back to school and some things are back to normal. And they talk to the cops and they make up a story that he was actually mangled by animals, not by people. And they're saying, well, the knife wounds don't look right. And she's just like, nope, that's what happened. And then it just kind of fades away and you pan over to how, you know, how classrooms have science areas that have stuff in formaldehyde and frogs and formaldehyde.
Yeah.
Well, it pans over to the shelf to this heart in a jar of formaldehyde. And it starts, you hear the thumping sound of a heart and then just dissolves away. So they're implying that they took the guy's heart and put it in formaldehyde and took it to school.
Oh, man. Dude, that's dark, man.
I'm sitting here watching this. I'm probably 11 or 12. Friend of mine was a year younger than me, and we're watching this with his parents.
Jeez, and this is based off of a true story.
Yes, and so they have these masks. Crazy. And I'll put the link in the show notes to some of these pictures. Okay. But you can see all the villains have these animal masks, and they never show them without their masks until the very end. And these masks are just creepy because they have like this cat mask, this Santa Claus mask, a duck mask, and it's just really creepy. The teacher opens the blinds, or she's teaching, and her back is towards the window, and then all the kids, you can see their eyes get really wide, and there's this guy with this cat mask right outside the window with a gun in his hand.
Yikes. Jeez.
The cinematography was actually pretty good. When I was rewatching it, they kind of hold the camera like when the guys are chasing the teacher and the kids through the bush. It's kind of at knee level, so the brush is hitting the camera in the lens and it really follows, you know, kind of jerky up and down thing. And so I thought that was kind of a cool way to get you involved in the chase, but It's brutal.
Man, so basically it was a wonky movie written off of a true story that was done pretty well from what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So how well was it received? I mean, did you say this was a TV movie?
HBO? Yeah, this was just like on, it was on HBO in, November 24th, 1985. And it was released in Australia in June of 86. But I was reading up on it. They played it a lot on HBO for four or 5 years. And it just stuck out to me because I was watching at such a young age, for one thing.
Right.
And I'm just like, whoa, this is really dark for 11-year-old Lee.
Yeah. Well, that's what we talked about back in the day. It was like, dude, we saw so many movies that I'm like, how did our parents be like okay with it? You know?
Funny story, we were watching on, I think it's on Hulu. They have Golden Girls, the TV show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And we were watching, I was like, wow, this has some kind of adult themes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And as a kid, I watched it a lot because it was just on TV or whatever. Yeah. I wasn't like a fan of it, but it was like, you know, you thought, oh, this is boring. But then you watch it as an adult and you're going, whoa, you know, there's a lot here.
Yeah. It's a little, it's kind of risque.
Right. Well, it's kind of the same thing with Cheers. I mean, even as a kid, I kind of understood that Cheers was, like you said, a little risque or whatever, you know, it's a little blue at times and stuff. But you watch it as an adult, it's like, holy smokes, they went there, you know. But yeah, but these movies, though, like they were.
That's what stuck out to me. It was just, it was my first truly rated R movie. And I'm sitting here watching it with his parents and like, wow, they're letting us watch this, you know? And the funny thing was that he was the son of a pastor in our church.
No kidding.
He was. And so I'm just like, we really shouldn't be probably watching this. Should we?
Oh man. That's so, anyway. So funny.
Yeah, I'll post some of the pictures. It's those masks are very creepy, and you can find it. I saw it on on YouTube. You can watch the whole thing on YouTube. It's interesting.
I'm gonna watch that actually. It's funny because, like, obviously, you know, America, the United States gets all the glory for almost all the movies that go out there and stuff, but like Australia, they actually put out some good stuff, especially back in the day. And I mean, think of like Mad Max, the first one. Like, I thought that was a phenomenal movie, you know. And I still think that it's hard for me to classify Mad Max and then the Road Warrior as like connected, because they're so different, you know. And I love them both the same, but it's like, if somebody said, which one do you like better, you know, I'd have to probably say the Road Warrior. But I think that the first movie has so much more depth and so much more of a plot to it, and it's just so well written, you know. It's so deep, but it's hard not to love the Road Warrior, though, you know.
You're right. I think Terminator would probably not be exactly the same, but similar. Terminator 2 was obviously huge, but the first one,
it was so different. You're exactly right. The first Terminator was so well written, and they're all well written, you know, but it's just like that first one, it's just like, man, it's the Holy Grail, you know. It's so good. But
heck of a concept.
Cool. Concept for sure.
So check out Fortress, but definitely not with your kids.
Yeah.
You don't want to ruin them like they did me. I was like, whoa, this is wow.
That's funny. Okay, so we'll move on to my pick. And I'm probably not gonna be able to go as deep as you did with your pick, because there's not a lot to go deep about, because this movie is something else. And gather around with your kiddos, because this is, I guess you would say, appropriate. There's definitely no, like, it's not a rated R movie at all. I mean, it would probably be rated G, you know, today's standards, probably PG or whatever back then. But so my pick was Megaforce, and it was shown in 1982. It did go to movie theaters. I'm going to summarize this movie super simple, because it's a very simple movie. But basically what it was, there's these two made up countries, and they're always at war. And obviously one country is more powerful than the other one. And then so the one that doesn't have a lot of power, doesn't have a lot of money, it's kind of a poor country. So they are tired of getting beat up by the other country. And so they reach out to the international secret force called Megaforce. And so basically Megaforce is like this kind of like, I don't know what you would say, like kind of like, well, like I said, just international police, I guess, or something like that, like an army.
It's like a large version of the A-Team.
Yes, that's it. There you go. Like the A-Team. Exactly. And so what they're known for is just like their well-known fighting skills and stuff like that. But then they have like these incredible vehicles. And so with that segue, it's funny that I say that, because that's pretty much what this whole movie is built on. Like, all their money and all their direction was like, let's do cool vehicles and then the people will flock to it. And they're like, yeah. But then they're like, let's not have good acting. Let's not have a good story. Let's not, you know, let's just have the plot about as thick as a piece of paper. And, but people will flock to it. And so basically the premise is, like I said, two countries going at it. The poorer country is tired of it. So they reach out to Megaforce. Megaforce comes in and they basically stick up for this other country and, you know, end up like trying to, you know, go head to head with this other country and stuff. And then the other country gets privy of the information that they're coming after them. And so they like set some traps, and there's like a love story involved where like this one lady, she's like trying out for Megaforce in the midst of all this. And then like the leader, he kind of falls for her and stuff. And then they have like this little romance scene and everything. And it's so wonky. But anyways, so of course, you know where this is going to go. They end up having a big epic battle at the end and this big, huge, like, salt bed, and like these like a dried up lake, I should say, like a lake bed. And so there's like these sand dunes and stuff, and all this craziness ensues and lasers and stuff like that. And it's a pretty epic scene for a 1982 movie with a very low budget, and it's an entertaining scene, to say the least. But anyways, and then it like ends off where, like, I believe this is how it ends. It's been a little bit since I've seen it, but it ends off where the main guy, he okay, so I gotta talk about the vehicles for a second. Okay, so the vehicles are, again, what make this movie. And I will say, I thought the vehicles are actually really, really cool. And so basically they took a whole bunch of dune buggies and, you know, I don't want to say they fabricated a whole bunch of, like, cool kind of armor to it that had all these zigzags and stuff to it. And then they did the same thing with these motorcycles, like these dirt bikes, and they put all this, like, weird armor on it and stuff with all these zigzags and stuff. But then the cool thing was they put, like, it looked like black hubcaps on all of the tires of the dune buggies and all the tires of the motorcycles. But then they all have these weird guns and rockets on them and everything. But it's just, what was kind of cool about it, what stuck out to me as a kid, because again, this came out in 1982, so I was 4 when this came out, so I was probably 5 when I watched it, so I barely remembered it. And so, funny story, as a few years ago, it just, I don't remember what it was, but it just popped in my head about the scene with motorcycles with, like, jagged edges and then all these different colors of smoke coming behind the motorcycles. And so I'm like researching everywhere. I'm Googling everything. Can't find nothing about it. And finally I reach out to my older brother. I'm like, do you remember this movie? There's something about, like, motorcycles and cars and stuff like that. And there's, like, all this smoke coming behind it. They're, like, jumping these dunes and stuff. And he's like, man, I kind of remember a little bit. And so the two of us spent, like, a half a day just, like, Googling all over the place, trying to figure out what it was. And then all of a sudden, boom, it was like, he writes me back. He's like, dude, it's Megaforce. He's like, I found it. And he's like, sent over a trailer for him, like, yes, you know. So then I watched it. Awesome. I was like, oh no.
Oh, this
is bad. Oh, but as a kid, you know, as a 5-year-old, I thought it was the coolest movie in the world. But so there's just this scene where the whole Megaforce is like, they're like, attack, you know, and this whole, so yep. All of these motorcycles, I mean, there's probably like 50 motorcycles start coming over through this salt bed, and they all have these different colors of smoke and stuff. And again, you got to post pictures of it and stuff.
Yes.
I don't know how these poor guys were riding these motorcycles, because the smoke was, like, coming from the front, like, right in their face.
I know. I saw the picture of that. I was like, how are they doing this?
It was just insane. But anyways, the whole story is, you know, bad country versus good country. They have a big epic battle. Good country ends up winning. Bad country retreats and, like, I'll get you next time kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah.
But the one thing that I did want to bring up, obviously this wasn't based on a true story.
No.
Like your movie.
We could only hope it was, though.
Right. Exactly. Well, the funny thing is, like, they actually thought this movie was going to actually do really good in the box office.
Oh,
but I forget what movie it was that it was going up against. It went up against something else.
I think that was one of your other picks that went up.
No, it was. It was. There was Alien. Yeah, we'll get into that another thing. Okay. But this was a different one. There was going up against something else, and so it was just completely discarded. That, and it was garbage. You know, so that spread quick. You know, but the director, his name was Hal Needham, and so I just got to read this. It's so funny. So it says, Hal Needham later described it as kind of a version of James Bond done with a hell of a lot of less budget and no Roger Moore. But it was a high tech, good right wing film, and I thought it was kind of interesting. Those buggies that we built, they were dune buggies, and we revamped them a little bit and put the weapons on them and all that. And the military sent people out there to look at my weapons and my vehicles and how they run and how they handle. They were out there in the desert with me for a week watching. And if you go back and take a look at Desert Storm, there's a pretty good resemblance to my vehicles. They were pretty slick, pretty tricked out, and they had a hell of a job putting those things together. And I just died laughing, because I'm just like, okay, you look at the vehicles, I'm like, actually, he's kind of right.
Right.
It's like, if our army, dude, was okay, let's get these Hummers out here. Let's get these jets. Let's do all this stuff. It's like Megaforce
inspired by Megaforce.
If this guy is true, our army just got so much more cooler in my books.
You're exactly right. Can you see,
you know, they're like, like Norman, the red smoke.
You can see Norman Schwarzkopf saying, "You know what that dune buggy needs? It needs rockets on the top.
And some blue smoke behind it." Yeah. Oh man.
What was the purpose of the smoke behind the motorcycles? Do you remember?
Because it looked cool.
Oh, okay. So
that was it. No, I think it was like a rocket booster. I think if I remember.
Oh, okay.
It just made it go faster or something like that. But
you're right. It just looks cooler.
It just looked cool. That's all it was. But no, I mean, it's the vehicles are kind of cool. It's kind of cool. I mean, if you're just if you just want to watch a really dumb movie with really cool vehicles and stuff like that, go for it. It's worth it. It is, like I said, it's a dumb movie, but it is entertaining.
Yeah.
And it's not entertaining like, oh man, this is such a great movie. It's entertaining because you're just like, you're watching it and it's like, I've seen high school plays with better acting. Like there's this one scene you might have looked at because you said you watched a couple things.
Yeah.
There's this one scene where the main guy, he all the motorcycles just are motorcycles that look awesome, right? And they got the smoke. Yeah. And so his deal was like I think he created himself. He created a motorcycle that he wanted a motorcycle to fly. And so he ends up like, without giving it a test run, he's got it out there and stuff, and then he ends up like they all take off without him and stuff in this plane, and they got the belly of the plane open up in the back, and he's riding on his motorcycle, and then he like lowers these wings on it all dramatically and stuff, and it takes off into the air, and there's like all of his buddies are on the back of the plane, they're all like cheering him on and stuff. But it's the most like creepiest cheering I've ever seen in my
life. I think I've seen that scene, but I thought maybe it was in Delta Force. But now I think about it, that was Mega Force.
They're all yeah. And they're like, you can do it, you know. But it was so cheesy and so bad. Oh, it was like,
that's awesome.
I mean, I can just imagine the director being like, okay, act really, really excited. And he's like, just probably now act more excited. Like, yeah, he can do it. Yeah, yeah. It's like, you don't have to direct the person to be excited. Like, I think it was overacted and overdirected in that scene. But that scene to me where that motorcycle's taken up and they're all cheering him on and stuff. Oh, my gosh. That made the movie. That's it for me. You can Google if you don't want to watch the movie, just at least Google that scene, that Megaforce scene, and it'll make your year. I promise.
Mic drop. My work is done here.
That's right.
You know what, Jeff?
That's exactly right.
You need what you need to do is get some of those hubcaps and put them on your van.
Oh. Dude, don't even get me started.
You want to.
That's actually
you?
Not a bad idea. Well, the funny thing is my van actually has tires that are kind of like that. I got some big old knobby tires on our van. Oh. That's funny.
Do you think that's a subconscious nod back to 1982?
It might have been. I didn't even realize I did it. And I was like, I got to have those tires. I got to have the. I'll just get some. I don't even think they make hubcaps like that. So I'll have to get some like, what do they call those? Those snow sleds or whatever, like the disc sleds, and just like tape them to them.
Yeah, that's all it is. I bet you
rockets. That's right, and smoke coming out. That'd be great.
Mess with your wife and say, "Hey, look at this new car I want to get," and it's a Megaforce dune buggy.
Oh, I should. I should.
Or that motorcycle. One of those motorcycles.
Or a motorcycle.
You could probably, as bad as they look, you could probably 3D print the stuff for the motorcycle and put it on your motorcycle. Put it on a motorcycle.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's just all plastic stuff on it. So
I want to see you drive that motorcycle and have all the smoke come out and drive down your street like that.
Right. Yeah. See, that'd be great.
Watch the neighbors freaking out.
Yeah, because I remember when I was a little bit older as a child, as a kid, I was almost teenage, probably 9 or 10, something like that. And there was a kid in my class and he had a BMX bike. And it was like a street BMX bike or whatever, you know, so it didn't have like the knobby tires, had like the slick tires on it and stuff. And like, if you remember in the 80s, they all had like plastic, you know, like the cool bikes, like they had like the plastic 5-star wheels on them, stuff like that.
Yep.
But this kid, it looked like white hubcaps on his tires. And I just thought that was the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. And it was like a baby blue bike. And I think the wheels, I think were the tires were blue and then the hubcaps were white. Uh-huh. And I was like, man, and it always reminded me of that Megaforce movie. I was like, man, we got to get you some smoke, bro.
Do you know how many kids taped smoke balls to their bike and lit it and tried to drive right down the street with the smoke balls. It.
They're all burning their backs.
Oh, man.
All
You know that happened.
Oh, totally.
Oh,
totally.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's fun. Well, switching from Megaforce, we're going to go to the jungle. And my next pick is Baby, Secret of the Lost Legend, which came out in 1985. So 1985 again. And this is about a paleontologist and her husband discover a mother baby or a set of babies, brontosauruses, in Africa. And they try to protect them from a group of hunters that want to. Of course, you have the good people on one side that are trying to save the dinosaur and a group on the other that's trying to exploit the dinosaur and capture it and dissect it and study it.
Sure.
So that's the whole premise, is they're at the Ivory Coast and they see it, the dinosaur, and the bad guys see the dinosaur. They tranquilize it. Well, they kill there's a mother and a father and a baby, hence the name. They kill the father when they're trying to tranquilize the mother. And then they also capture the baby as well. The mother gets loose and the baby gets loose. And of course the mother kills the bad guy in the end, and the baby dinosaur and the mother dinosaur go off into the jungle. And the two good people say, we're just going to let them go. We just want this legend to live out there that there's this dinosaur still alive in Africa.
Sure.
And so after watching it again, it's not the best movie in the world as far as acting and special effects. But what really caught my interest back then was the fact that this whole idea that there are still dinosaurs or ancient animals still out there. And at the same time that this came out, there was an article. It used to get these little, I don't know, magazines at school that would, Scholastic, I think, used to do them. I guess they were kind of a newsletter. I'm not really sure, but it had an article in there about a scientist that went to Congo because there was reports from the locals about a dinosaur type creature that was in the jungle. And it kind of told his story, how he went there, and of course he never found anything, but just some of the things that he would go to different tribes and they would describe the same type of animal at different tribes, and they found what they think of footprints and things like that. So anyway, that just sparked my interest. I didn't realize that at the time that, you know, Japanese fishermen that caught a corpse of a plesiosaurus in their nets from 1931. We've probably seen that picture before. And that ancient fish, I think it's called the Coelacanth, I haven't pronounced it, but a fish that they thought was extinct. And so anyway, that just really sparked my interest as an 11-year-old. I was like, holy cow, maybe there are dinosaurs still out there. I don't know. But I just really thought that was cool that today, you know, or 1985, that there might be a dinosaur in Africa. So it was just really interesting.
Yeah.
And it starred William Catt, who is from The Greatest American Hero, if you remember.
Oh, yes. Yep, totally.
And Sean Young, the female in the movie, is from Blade Runner. She's also in Dune.
Yes.
She's also in Ace Ventura. I didn't realize that, but yeah, she's in that as well. So two big stars at the time. And
played the bad guy in Ace Ventura.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, you're right.
Yep. Or the bad girl, I should say.
Bad girl, yeah.
Yep.
And anyway, it just really sparked my interest. It didn't really do that well. I think it made $10 million, but it was more of a wonky movie just because the animatronics of the dinosaur were very low budget and the special effects weren't that good. But it was just the interest that it sparked in me as far as, hey, maybe there are dinosaurs, maybe they're not. And you can go on YouTube now and see videos of, I'm doing air quotes here, of possible dinosaur sightings. So I'm kind of on the fence about it. One day I'm like, you know, maybe there is. It's a big world out there. Maybe there are some creatures out in the ocean or in a jungle someplace that as we thought was extinct, but it's still there. And then other days I'm like, this is just all fake.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, so that was just a fun, fun little movie that I actually got to go to in person. We didn't go to the movies very often, but that one, they let me go, and it is PG, so it's not, it's fine. It's not like my other pick where it's gruesome and bloody.
Yes, no kidding. Yeah, that's a different dichotomy for sure.
Yes, yes.
From one extreme to the other. Yeah, that was definitely a kid's movie. I remember seeing that. I don't remember the story again because that was so long ago for me as well. I probably saw that. Let's see, when did it come out? You said
in 85. I guarantee it was on TBS probably 1,000 times.
Yeah, yeah. It was either TBS or maybe even HBO or something like that.
Or HBO, I saw it. Yeah. But
yeah. But I just remember like the noises of the little baby made. Yeah, the little baby dinosaur. And
yep.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought it was a good movie though as a kid, you know?
Yeah, it really just sparked my interest. I wanted to go to Africa and find a dinosaur after watching it.
Kidding. Yeah, let's go. Let's do it now. Yeah,
let's go right now. Let's go. No problem. But yeah, I had all those plans that I was going to take a group there and we were going to go in the deep forest of Africa. I even, you know, got a map out of Congo and was like, okay, so you can go up this river here. And you know, I bet you if you go real deep, you can find it. And so,
yeah, yeah.
But obviously I'm not in Africa. And so I didn't find a dinosaur.
Yeah. Well, you know what I missed though? I missed the rains down in Africa.
Oh. Are they blessed?
They are blessed. That's right.
So yeah, 1985 dinosaur movie.
Yeah. That was pretty good though. I think if it would have had a better budget, I think it would have been huge though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I thought that I remember the story being really good, but
yeah, it was, I watched it again and it's, the pacing is a little it's very choppy in my opinion. It doesn't it gets real exciting and then it's like okay, it really tries to balance or tries to kind of balance the cuteness with action. I just don't know that fits well anyway, but it's still
sure,
again, nostalgia clouds your judgment. It's still it's an okay movie. It was just fun that the imagination that started, I guess, for me.
Sure That's cool.
Yeah, what's your next one?
All right, so I'm going to, I know we have a list here, I'm actually going to jump and come back to my third on my list. I'm actually going to say my second. This is one that probably a lot of people remember. This one again was on TBS a lot.
Yeah.
You know, things of that nature, but I don't remember it being in the movie theater. I'm sure it probably was considering who it starred in it and stuff, but this movie, 1986 is Big Trouble in Little China. So again, it's you know, probably one of the more known movies on our list here today, but this is one of those rare movies that it bombed in the box office, but then just later on it ended up becoming like a cult classic. Yeah. And I think it was because it was actually a really good movie, but it just had a horrible time taking off in the movie theater because this one, it was actually going up against Aliens.
Yeah.
And how can you have anything in the movie theater when Aliens was out? That was such a killer movie, you know.
James Cameron. I mean,
Cameron. Jeez, man. Yeah. So, and then having something like this, like a wonky movie like this, it's just not going to do very good. So,
no.
But obviously, it starred Kurt Russell and Kim Cattrall, and great cast. I mean, there's even all the bad guys and everything. It was all good acting. It was done very, very well. It seemed like a pretty high budget. In fact, it was they actually had a gross budget of $25 million, and then they only made about $11 million in the box office. So that just shows you how bad it bombed.
Yeah.
So that was pretty tough. But I'm sure with DVD sales and stuff like that, they probably made their money back and then some. But either way, so the story of it is, again, I don't want to go too deep into it because I think a lot of people have probably seen this movie. But basically, Kurt Russell, his name in the movie, he's a truck driver. His name is Jack Burton. Mm-hmm. Sounds like such a Kurt Russell name in a movie, you know, Jack, you know. But anyway, so he's a truck driver and he has like I think he has a bet with a restaurant owner friend named Wang Chi. Yep. And then he loses it, and then to make sure that he follows through on the payment, Jack like goes with him to the airport to pick up his Chinese fiance Miao Yin, and then like all this craziness ensues. And so basically he's just going to take her along with him, or take her back. And basically this Chinese street gang called the Lords of Death end up following them to make actually to kidnap her, because like she's like this major part of the story. He just thinks it's just some girl, but ends up being important down the road. But anyways, so they end up, you know, kidnapping her, and then he gets tossed into this whole big, you know, dramatic part of the movie where he's like trying to figure out who she is. He's got to try to figure out how to get her back, you know, and then he ends up finding out it's not just I'm bringing a girl back. It's like, holy smokes, there's all this like Chinese history involved and stuff, because like the Lords of Death or whatever, they were actually like kind of like gods or whatever. So they had, I think it was, they had thunder, rain, and lightning, who the three storms were.
Yep.
And so those mighty warriors or whatever. So like the thunder guy, he would like, if I recall, he would like get real like toughed up or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he would like clap his hands or something like that. I don't know. It's been a few years since I watched this.
Yeah, but like he's kind of like Hulk out type.
Yeah, he'd Hulk out and stuff, and then like that was his power or whatever. And then like I don't remember what the rain guy did, but then the lightning guy, he was like Raiden from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I just gonna say that.
Exactly. And I think that's where they got that from, by the way, because he looked just like him and everything. Yeah. So it has the same hat and everything and all the lightning coming out everywhere. But anyways, long story short, so he ends up finding her, and then she gets like stolen again by like this creature, and then they like go and try to find like the main guy, and there's this like old Chinese guy that they end up like threatening to kill and stuff. And then anyways, they end up finding out that he basically has to battle those three lords or whatever, the three storms or whatever, and because like in the midst of all that he ends up losing his semi and stuff, and then it turns into, well, I don't even care about any of this anymore, I just want to go back, I just want to get in my truck, get out of here. And and so he ends up having to fight those three guys and stuff in a pretty epic battle. And so I think he easily kills like the rain guy, I think, with just like a knife. And then like he ends up like getting the lightning guy, he ends up killing him. It's been so long since I watched it.
Yeah,
I think he ends up killing him by like bouncing the lightning back off of him or something like that.
Yeah.
And then like he just like ends up like exploding or whatever. I just remembered like, yeah. But then like the thunder guy or whatever, I thought that was like the coolest scene, because he gets him so angry that he just like, he's so enraged with anger, he just ends up exploding.
Yeah. You know?
So, but anyways, and then, you know, long story short, he ends up getting the girl, and then, you know, and then he gets the girl, we'll just say. Yeah. So he doesn't bring her back like he was supposed to and all that other stuff. So, but it kind of left off on the end of it, if I recall, like it was going to be like there might have been a part two.
Yes.
Because I think like the monster, it was kind of like an orangutan kind of looking thing or whatever. And they end up finding out that like they show like the end of the movie, they show like the monsters in this truck still as it's driving away.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So it looked like it was going to go into a part two, but it just didn't. Obviously the movie didn't go anywhere, so you know, what can he do? But
it did really well, I think, on DVD, or not DVD sales, VHS sales and rentals. Yeah, it's a classic. Get the girl at the end, beat the bad guy.
Yeah, totally. And then how can you go wrong with the Kurt Russell movie, though?
That's what I was just saying.
He's awesome.
He fit that part perfect. So whoever casted that was spot on. I mean, he played Jack Burton, the I don't give a crap type of guy.
Right.
He doesn't need the big gun. He's just going to outwit him and outbeat him. And
exactly.
So
the reason I said that this was a wonky movie to me was because to me, it didn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
Okay, you have this American truck driver in China, and he's like wearing like Chinese, like a tank top or whatever. It's so weird. It's like blended like Chinese and American stuff all together, and there's so much there Yeah, but it's just like, what happened? How did you get here? You know?
Yeah, yeah. One of these is not like the other, and a Jack Burton doesn't belong here at all.
Exactly. It's like,
you could have stuck Jackie Chan in there, and it would have made sense.
That's what I'm saying. It felt like, to me, that's what I always felt like. It felt like to me like they were gonna make a kung fu movie, and they were like, who can we get that's really, really big, you know? And they're like, oh man, well, we've already used the crap out of Jackie Chan. We've already used, you know, this guy. Well, let's use somebody American, and let's, you know, and then they just like kind of turn it into this or something like that. It's probably not how it was, but that's how it felt like to me. It was just like, well, let's just use Kurt Russell and slap him in here, and we'll rewrite the story a little bit so it makes, you know, makes sense. But it just didn't. It didn't make sense at all. But it's a good movie, though. It's a good movie. But I just thought it was just so wonky, because it's like, how is there an American truck driver over in China? How did his Peterbilt get over there? You know, it's like, because he's like, it's my truck, you know, and he's like, he's so upset that it got stolen and everything. It's like, if you're just over there for work, you know, you're probably not that, you know, ticked off that your truck's stolen. It's like, whatever, I'll just go back to the States. You know, it's easier over there. I'm not dealing with dudes shooting lightning out of their hands, you know, but
John Carpenter that did it. Which
John Carpenter, that's right.
Yeah.
So funny thing about that. So he had never done a blockbuster type movie before. And so he wasn't used to having, you know, all this budget stuff and having, you know, having to deal with timelines and stuff like he was on that. But he was like, I'm willing to dive into this and see if I can make it in the blockbuster type movies and stuff. And it bombed so bad. And then he just swore off doing blockbuster movies ever again. So from that point on, all he ever did was independent filming. So, and I thought that was great, because you can definitely tell, like, this is his niche, you know, because he's so, you know, he's so good at what he does and stuff. And he's just good at the independent films, you know. So
it was Jackie Chan. John Carpenter wanted Jackie Chan to play. To play Wang Chai. Okay, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Not Jack Burton. And then also, you were right, the character from Mortal Kombat, Raiden, was based on this character.
Yeah. Nice. I think everybody kind of saw that, though.
And yeah, it's not that hard. And then David Lo Pan, who played the Thunder God, was inspiration for the evil sorcerer Shang Tsu. Oh, from Mortal Kombat. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
So same guy, yeah.
So that makes sense.
So two characters from Mortal Kombat are inspired from this movie.
Right.
So there you go. You're welcome, Mortal Kombat fans.
That's right. You're welcome. That's right.
Jack Burton is responsible for Mortal Kombat.
There you go. There you go. Speaking of which, I should, this is kind of off subject or whatever, but have you seen on Netflix, there's a show on there now called High Score?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh man, that was really, really good.
Yeah.
About video games, really, really good. And they had a segment on there where they talk about, I forget, it wasn't just about Mortal Kombat. Maybe it was, but I know it was a big section of it that was talking about Mortal Kombat. And I thought it was really, really cool how, obviously, like I said, Raiden, you know, came from that. But then I thought it was funny how, and I don't know if you knew this and if you saw this in the show, but they actually tried to get Jean-Claude Van Damme to be Johnny Cage in the video game.
Okay.
And I believe he was going to be himself. And so he was going to fight as himself in the video game, and he turned it down and said it was a stupid idea. So then they're like, okay, we're going to make fun of you in the video game. So then that's when they came up with Johnny Cage, and they made him like a movie star. Like, he's too cool for everybody. And like, I'm hot stuff kind of a thing. And so that's what so he's based off of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That's so awesome. I thought
that was kind of funny.
So the whole Johnny Cage is just a mockery of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Exactly. I thought that was hilarious.
I've only seen the first episode. I started watching it. And I just didn't get to the rest of it. It's kind of how the toys made, or toys that made us, but for video games.
Yes.
Yep.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yep. Yep. Very good.
Cool. Well, my last pick is, again, 1985. I don't know why I didn't plan this at all. But
you didn't have anything going on in 85, huh?
I must not have. I was a lonely 11-year-old. But
that's right.
But the thing is, most of these I didn't watch in 1985, and Better Off Dead is exactly that. I didn't discover this one until probably late 90s. It was...
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. But The funny thing is, I remember in junior high, so this would have been in 87-ish, 88, some of my friends were quoting from this movie, and then I watch it 10 years later, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's what they were talking about.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So anyway, Better Off Dead is about a teenager, Lane Meyer, played by John Cusack, and has a crush on his girlfriend, Beth. And Beth dumps him for the team captain for the ski team in high school, which is bonkers, named Roy Stalin. So Lane Myers is depressed and decides to commit suicide. However, he gives up and tries to improve his skills as a skier and tries to impress Beth by skiing this big mountain. Meanwhile, his neighbor has an exchange student from France named Monique, who he falls in love with. And then finally, at the end, he beats his nemesis, Roy Stalin, and rides off in his new Camaro, or his Camaro that he fixed up, with his girl. So it ends up being fine. So it's just hilarious movie that is so quotable. I don't know. Have you seen this one, Jeff?
No, I've never seen that. Oh, I didn't even know this existed.
There's so many quotes from this movie. I would say this is definitely top five. I don't know if it's number one. I would say maybe Spaceballs and Tommy Boy are probably number one and number two, but this has to be maybe a number three. It just has so many just funny one-liners in there.
Okay.
So the cast is John Cusack, who plays Lane Meyer, the main character. David Ogden Stiers is his dad, who's from MASH, if you remember him, kind of the bald-headed guy.
Yep.
Dan Schneider plays Ricky Smith, the awkward teenager across the street that has the French exchange student that he's in love with. He's from Head of the Class. He's Dennis Blunden from Head of the Class. And he also wrote Good Burger, Drake and Josh, and iCarly, and a bunch of other stuff for Nickelodeon back in the 90s and early 2000s. Curtis Armstrong, who's Booger from Revenge of the Nerds, Moonlighting, and he plays Charles DeMar, his best friend, who has probably one of the best lines in the movie. He says he's trying to talk to his friend Lane about how to impress girls. And Charles DeMar, his friend, says, Lane, I've been going to this high school for 7.5 years. I'm no dummy. And it takes you a while to get it. You're like, oh, he's been in high school for 7.5 years. It's just
funny.
His friend is just so hilarious. But anyway, the funny thing is, the guy that wrote this and directed, his name's Savage Steve Holland. The movie is very autobiographical, he said. He said his high school girlfriend dumped him for the captain of the ski team, and he got really depressed. And there's this constant character in there, the paper boy, that keeps coming to their house. You've probably heard this, $2, $2. Anyway, he keeps coming to his house saying, I need the $2 for what you owe for the newspaper. So he constantly shows up in the movie asking for his $2. And the director said, yes, I had a paper boy that kept coming to our house asking for $2 for the newspaper. So it's just so funny that, again, just like my first pick, the movie is actually based upon a real life scenario. So one other thing is Lane's mother in the movie is based upon his mother, who was always trying to try these new recipes. So in the movie, she's cooking these just bonkers types of foods, and it just doesn't go well. And Steve said his mother would do the same exact thing. And one year for his birthday, she gifted him some TV dinners. And there's a scene in the movie where she says the exact same thing to him that she does in the movie. So
really?
She says, I got you these really cool frozen dinners because you like peach cobbler. And this one has peach cobbler in it.
Oh, my gosh.
You have to watch the movie. I'm not doing it justice.
No, it sounds good, though.
Also, one of the characters in here, his girlfriend, she plays one of Freddy Krueger's first victims in the Nightmare on Elm Street movie. And in this movie, there's a person standing behind her that has the Freddy Krueger sweater on behind her.
Oh, okay.
And John Cusack did not like this movie. He was so ticked off. I guess.
Really?
Yeah. I guess the Steve showed him an early cut of it. He's like, I hate this movie. This is the dumbest movie I've ever done. I don't like it. And he did not like it.
No kidding. So even after it was all finished and stuff, he still didn't like it.
Yeah. And it did okay. Well, it didn't do great, but it only grossed $10 million, but it got a 7.1 on Amazon and a 77% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it did really well on VHS sales. And it was shown again on cable, just ad nauseum.
Okay. But,
and then one last thing is he has a bizarre brother named Badger. He's kind of the genius brother, and he builds a space shuttle out of kitchen parts. And he also has this scene where he tries to cut out the coupons on cereal boxes so that he can send off for space shuttle parts.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
So it has all these little kind of side stories and side characters, like his little brother and then the paper boy that just appear, throughout the movie. So it's really good. I think you'd love it.
Sounds great.
Funny movie. I mean, we're not making fun of suicide. I definitely don't mean that, but
sure,
just the whole thing where because he comes out in the end fine, but he has to take that step of realizing, life isn't so bad. I don't need to be trying to kill myself. It's not as bad as it looks. And so anyway, plus it's got I know you're a car guy. It's got a sweet black Camaro.
Oh, I'm in.
Yeah.
He had me at sweet black Camaro.
Sweet black Camaro.
gotta start off with that, Lee.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So anyway,
that sounds like a great movie though.
It's got a lot of
big names in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I think you'd love it. If nothing else, just watch the trailer and I think you'll get hooked.
Now, what is it rated? Is it
probably, I would say PG-13. Does have some language.
Okay. But it's not like anything like, you could watch it with the kids or shouldn't watch it with the kids.
I think if the kids maybe 12 or older.
Okay.
His brother orders a book called How to Pick Up Trashy Women. And so, and he's like, nah, his brother. So Lane's like, no way. He's not going to be able to pick up women. And then he comes home and he's picked up a bunch of trashy women. He's having this party in his room with a bunch of girls.
Oh my gosh.
Show anything, but it has language. That'd be the only thing I'd be cautious.
Okay. Well, so I'll probably watch it on my own then.
Yeah. Watch it on your own first and then see what you think. So yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. Cause I had the guy that played Booger, right? From,
yep. Oh, he's hilarious.
Revenge of the Nerds.
He's just kind of his quirky, dumb friend and gives him bad advice all the time. And
dude, he went like nowhere quick though, huh? Like,
well, yeah, he did Moonlighting and then, I don't know what he did after that. Was it. But that's kind of by late 80s, he was kind of done. But he's a good actor. He's funny.
Yeah, he was. He was super funny. I thought he was, especially in the Revenge of the Nerds, man. He was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In this one, he's just as good. So you'll love it. I guarantee you.
I'm going to check that out. For sure. Okay. Yeah. When you said Better Off Dead at first, I thought you were talking about I thought you were going to talk about Drop Dead Fred, which I thought was that's a 1991 movie. But have you ever seen that movie?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, man. You want to see a wonky movie. Okay. I mean, it is, it's just hilarious. It's just funny. It's about like this kid who's got like a, what do you call it? An imaginary friend. And that's Drop Dead Fred. And he's just constantly, or is it a kid or a girl? It's a lady, it's a girl.
Oh, okay.
And so I think it's kind of one of those things where like she had him when she was like little. And then like, as she grew up, he faded away and stuff. And then like, now she's like growing up in her 20s and stuff, but she's starting to have like some anxiety issues or something like that. And then all of a sudden he starts popping around again, as her imaginary friend and everything. She's like, what are you doing here and stuff? And he's just like trying to like, come on, let's have all the fun again, like making mud pies and all these weird things and stuff. So it's kind of like a little bit like Inside Out, that Disney movie, or not Disney movie, but the kids movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. And where there's like the imaginary friend that comes back or something like that.
Oh, okay.
It's It's a hilarious movie. Hilarious movie. So yeah, it has, funny.
Phoebe Cates in it. Yeah.
Phoebe Cates. Yep. Okay. It's gosh, you got to watch that movie again.
Okay.
Went off on a tangent there, but if you haven't seen Drop Dead Fred, that's a great movie.
Okay.
So anyways, okay. So my last pick was not Drop Dead Fred. My last pick is probably another movie that a lot of people probably know about. It was UHF, filmed in 1989, or came out in 1989, and that stars the one and only Weird Al Yankovic. And so, to me, the reason I want to put this movie on here is, obviously, it is a crazy, wonky movie, but it's not necessarily a B movie. I think it actually did pretty well in the box office. I went and saw this. This is, again, like what you're saying. I didn't get to go to the movie theater very often. Yep. This was the first movie that I ever went to that I didn't go with my family. And I had only gone to a handful of movies before this movie. And so I actually went with my friend and her parents. We lived down the street from each other and stuff like that. And so we kind of grew up playing together and stuff. And so I loved, as a little kid, I loved Weird Al. And I just loved all of his videos and stuff. And I had his tapes and everything, and like Christmas at Ground Zero and stuff like that. You know, like I just loved all of those goofy songs and everything. And so when I found out he was in the movie, I was like, oh my gosh, I got to go. And my dad was like, I'm not going to watch that movie. And then like my friend Laura down the street was like, my dad's taking me. And I'm like, please, 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 can I go? So they're all like, yep, we can make it happen. So they came over and picked me up and brought us down there. And then we showed up so early that we were like one of the first 10 people in line or something like that. And so like the first 10 people end up getting a movie sized poster, you know, like the movie poster or whatever. And so we got one of those take home. Oh my gosh, man. I was elated. I just remember like my hand was like, so sweaty. Yeah, exactly. My hand, like it was like a tube, you know, like it was rolled up in cellophane plastic and stuff. And my hand was so sweaty carrying that thing around the entire time. Cause I didn't want to put it down or whatever, you know, and get like a
death grip on it.
Right. They should have said like, come to the, at the end of the movie and we'll give it to you. But no, they gave it to us in line. And I was like, okay, cool. And I was so freaking, it was so awesome, man.
You still have it?
Anyways. I don't know what happened to it. It probably got torn down or something like that. My brother probably ruined it because in a fight or something like that, you know, but no, that was, anyways. So the movie, if you haven't seen it, super, super fun movie. So Weird Al Yankovic is, he plays a character named George Newman. And so he's the nephew of this guy named Harvey. And so basically Harvey wins the deed to this UHF channel 62. And basically that channel is like in demise and it's failing and it's, you know, nobody's paying attention to it and it's near bankrupt. And so Harvey wins it in a poker game. And he doesn't know what to do with it. So he's just like, well, here, you know, George, you go run it. You know, like I think he's like a, you know, like he's like, he deems him as pretty smart, you know? And so he's like, here, you go take care of it. So he's like, okay, I don't know anything about this, but I'll do my best. So then him and his buddy, Bob, they try to, you know, get the ratings up and stuff. And it's just bombing because it's just a whole bunch of reruns and all this stuff. And again, they don't know what they're doing. So a package comes to him and it's, you know, it's delivered to the wrong place. And so they end up taking it to the right place and it ends up going to a VHF station called Channel 8. And so he delivers it over to him and then brings it to the CEO. And that guy's name is RJ. And so he's just like, he tries to fire George and he's like, dude, I don't work here. And he's like, what? He's like, so he like gets him kicked out and stuff. And so as he's leaving, he ends up seeing the janitor who ends up being, I can't remember his name now, but the guy from Seinfeld, the tall, Michael lanky guy.
Michael Richards,
there you go. And so he ends up like, you know, running into him and stuff. And then he's like, talks to him and he's basically, janitor's like treated unfairly by RJ and stuff. And so he's like, you know, you don't need to work here. He's like, how about you come work for me at Channel 62? And he's like, okay. So George and Bob, they start creating new programs to try to drive up the ratings and stuff. And so they create a new program called Uncle Nutsy's Clubhouse. And so it's like a live children's show, kind of like Bozo the Clown and stuff like that. Yep. When we were kids, if you remember. But it's still not doing very good. The station's not doing very good. And so they decide to, you know, bankruptcy's imminent. They go to the bar, like everything's going bad. He like forgets his girlfriend's birthday and everything. And so she leaves him and stuff. And so they're like, that's it, you know? And so then he, you know, kind of goes on about his life on the Uncle Nutsy and then on the, yeah. And then he goes to a bar or whatever for a drink with Bob. And then basically at the bar, they see all the patrons and stuff sitting around and stuff. And they're actually watching the Uncle Nutsy's, you know, stuff. And they're actually talking about, you know, like, or not talking, but they're laughing about all the crazy antics on that show. And so like, well, hey, actually, maybe we're onto something here. Maybe we should stop, you know, trying to play with what's already there and let's do our own stuff. And so, so then they sit down and they come up with a whole list of new shows and stuff. And then they basically redo Uncle Nutsy's Clubhouse. And then they call it Stanley Spadowski's Clubhouse. Yep. And, and then that just blows up. And so they kind of, you know, center the rest of the channel around that. And then they just have all of these crazy, you know, games on there, and they have all these crazy other shows and stuff like that. And my favorite part of that, of that show or whatever is we've actually even featured it on Mega for some weird reason, but I think Eddie, cause this is one of Eddie from Make Eternity Great Again. This is one of his favorite movies, if not his favorite movie. I don't remember. But anyways, there's this scene in there where this little boy finds the marble in the oatmeal. And he's like, hey, lucky you, lucky little boy, you found the marble in the oatmeal. And he's like, so you know what that means? You get a drink from the fire hose. He pulls a kid out of the pool of like oatmeal. He's just dripping an oatmeal and sticks him on like a fake horse, and they just stick a fire hose to his face. And he's like counting down, and it's like blows out the water and just like shoots him across the stage. It's just like, oh my gosh, it's so funny. But anyways, so moving on. So the station's doing really, really good. RJ hates it from Channel 8 that now all of a sudden they're competing with a junky UHF channel. And so he basically finds out that George owes some money. And so he goes and says, I'll tell you what, I'll pay off all your debts and stuff if you give me the show. And so he's like, okay, he's going to do it. But then he was like, wait a minute, maybe I should give it one more chance. So he decides to create a telethon to raise $75,000 by the end of the week so that he can, they don't have to go bankrupt. So anyway, so that's what he ends up doing. But then they end up falling $2,000 short of their goal. And so it's like a really sad part and stuff. But then like this hobo inside of the movie ends up cashing in like this rare coin that he had, gives him the money, and then he's able to buy the show. But then he makes the show public, you know, so it's like a public channel, so it's owned by the public. And so, but then it all wraps up and stuff, and like you know, the Stanley Spadowski's Clubhouse is still doing awesome and everything like that. And so he ends up taking over the channel, and George kind of, you know, I think he walks away from it, if I recall, at the very end and stuff, but he ends up making good with his girlfriend and stuff, and they kind of rekindle their relationship and stuff and move on. And it's just a big happy ending. So the channel is doing really, really good. It's owned by the public. You know, nobody's getting rich off of it besides the, you know, the town and stuff. And I don't know. It's just a really, you want to talk about wonky. I mean, anything that Weird Al Yankovic has his hands on is going to be crazy. That's what this movie was. So
there's so many funny little skits, you know, he did the spoofs, like Conan the Librarian.
Yes. And the Rambo. And that's kind of like, you know, that's who he was, you know, I mean, that's, I don't know if you've ever seen him live in a live concert before.
I haven't. No, I've seen some videos of him live though. So
that is a bucket list thing you got to do. If you ever get the opportunity, anybody listening, if you ever get the opportunity to see Weird Al Yankovic live, you got to go see him, because he is like, you hear all these stories like Cher, how like Cher changes outfits between like every single, you know, song and stuff like that. Well, it's one thing to change dresses. It's another thing to completely, you know, he'll be dressed like a surgeon in one song, and like, and it, every song rolls right into the next song. And so he's dressed like a surgeon in one song, and then like all of a sudden he comes out in the big huge Michael Jackson fat suit, you know, and then he'll come out dressed like a Jedi, you know, and like it's just like, and it's, you know, so I went and saw them in Lincoln, and that would have been in 2004 2005, something like that. It was insane, and it was like, it felt like it was like 2 hours long. I had no idea how many songs that guy had actually done that were that many hits and stuff, but it just kept going and going and going, and then he does little comedy skits in between and stuff. And I have to say, like, one of my favorite parts of that show, that I thought was hilarious, and we ended up stealing it because I went with my bass player in my band that I was in at the time because we both liked Weird Al. And so we stole this thing that he did on stage where he was like, this is kind of dumb. I probably shouldn't even say it, but it's anyways, I thought it was like, anyways, I'm burying the lead, Lee, but anyways, so that he like goes around and he's like introducing his band members. He's like, over here on drums, I got so-and-so. And he like does like this drum solo and everybody cheers. And it's like, over here on guitar, I got this guy. And he says his name and everyone's like, yeah. He does like a quick guitar solo. And he's like, over here on bass, I got, yeah, whatever, moving on. And like everybody just starts laughing, you know. So here I'm in this like hardcore metal band, you know, and I'm like, we should start doing that. And so, and the funny thing was, the guy that was with me, he was a bass player, and he's like, yeah, and then do it to me. I'm like, all right, sweet. So then like from then on out, that's what we did all the time. And
really
thought it was funny. Yeah, was
so how'd the crowd react? Did they like it?
They thought it was funny. They actually got into it. It was pretty funny. So
thank you but, Weird Al, right?
That's right. That's just like, why would a metal band be doing something Weird Al did, you know? But I don't think anybody figured that out, that it was a Weird Al thing. But
oh, probably not.
We stole it. That's
he's
right.
High, I thought he's it was high hilarious. Energy. I mean, he's his concerts. I've seen him on TV. His concerts. He's just high energy all the time.
He is.
And he's totally in character. When he's in character, he's in character.
He is in character. It was pretty insane because he doesn't show his age. I mean, he's. No. I don't even know how old he is. I'd have to look that up.
Let me see here. He's in his probably almost 60 by now. But
I'd say he's probably over 60.
Born 1959. So yeah.
Yeah, 61. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Jeez.
Wow. Hey, fun fact, you remember the Wheel of Fish skit?
Yes.
They used real fish for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they put him so funny story, they got him at 6 a.m. and they didn't start filming that scene till 4:30 in the afternoon, and there was no air conditioning in the room.
No, so that just had to be rank.
Oh yeah, Weird Al said it was ripe, to say the least.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's a funny skit too. All those skits are just. This is another one that I think is one of the most quotable. I mean, yes. Raoul's Wild Kingdom. You know, ooh, yes. Teaching dogs to fly.
That's right. That's right.
Oh my gosh.
It's so good. And then like when he like comes and he's like, they're like bringing all the animals out in the street and he's like, oh, and he's like, I got the goats and I got the llamas and I got like two goats. I got three llamas, something like that. And he's like, I got four badges. He's like, what? Badges?
Badges, yes.
Badges? We don't need no stinking badges. Badgers, that's what it was. Yeah, sorry.
Badgers, yeah, badgers.
Badgers. We don't need no stinking badgers. Badgers. Oh my gosh, like, that was so
Blazing
funny.
Saddles.
Yep, Blazing Saddles, that's right. My gosh.
That's a funny
movie. Such a good movie. Yep, it such is. A good movie.
Well, these are we got a lot of funny movies to watch because I need to watch Megaforce, which... Is it a comedy or is it just so
it's not
bonkers?
Meant to be. It's not meant to be at all. It's meant to be darn serious.
So I need to watch Megaforce. Like,
yeah, because like the director, he gets offended when people like make fun of it. He really loved that movie. So, but either way, anyways, so, gotta watch it.
So for a good laugh, I need to watch Megaforce, and you need to watch Better Off Dead.
Yes, for sure. Yep, I'm gonna put that down for sure.
And then
we go through some honorable mentions?
Yeah. There's a...
Sorry, I cut you off there, Lee.
No,
sorry.
No. Let's see. Another one was Masters of the Universe, just because it's a hidden gem again, but it's still... I still kind of like it.
How dare you say it's wonky? That's the greatest movie in the world.
Greatest movie ever. It is
a weird one.
Another one would have been The Neverending Story. I don't think that one, I don't know what it did at the box office, but I think it definitely has
it
a cult.
Pretty well.
It definitely has a cult classic.
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That's just hilarious.
Yeah. Yep.
Poltergeist. That's a
dude.
Scary one, but
love that movie, man.
It was a great
love that
80s.
Movie.
It's wonky. I mean, it's just bonkers, really, because it's just
yeah.
That scene with the tree outside the window. Oh my gosh!
Yes.
Scared the crap out of
you. Oh my gosh, dude! I had nightmares about that till I was like 30.
I know. Just last night.
Yeah, just last night. Oh my gosh.
So yeah. Yep. So that not necessarily because it wasn't a blockbuster, just because it's just bizarre and bonkers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, for sure.
There's three of them.
There's three. And then, so for me, I had my three honorable mentions would be Solar Babies, which again, very post-apocalyptic movie or whatever. And really cool movie. It's a kid's movie, but it bombed really, really bad. So I haven't seen it in a long time. I remember it being really, 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 really good. But
like we said, sometimes nostalgia is cloudy on our memory.
It is. It is. After looking at some of these. Long time since I just remember, like, I thought, because like they have like this like star ball or something like that, or like a solar ball or something like that. And I just thought like it was so cool how they did that. How it's like basically it glowed and everything, and I'm assuming they did some sort of, you know, television magic or whatever,
CGI,
you know.
Well, not yeah, CGI, yeah. But
yeah, but their way of CGI, you know. Yeah. But I thought it was done really, really cool and really well. Probably, and I went back and forth on if I should do this movie, but it was kind of a gross movie, but it was Garbage Pail Kids, the movie.
Yes.
Oh, and geez. That movie is like so bad and it's disgusting. And it's like one of those ones where you watch it once and you're like, I'm good. I don't think I need to see that again.
It's so like very sophomore-ish humor.
Right, exactly. Yep. And that's like right up there with like almost like Killer Clowns from Outer Space, you know, yeah. Where it's just like weird puppets and stuff like that, you know. So
yeah, those puppets give you which nightmares. Is
also yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is like I don't know if I want to recommend anybody to watch that movie. But and then the last movie I was gonna honorable mention was Silver Bullet.
Yes.
Which was I think it's a great movie.
I think so too.
Yeah, and there's a lot of kind of star-studded cast on there. That was got Corey Haim and what's his name, the blonde haired guy, crazy blonde haired guy, Gary Busey. There we go. Yeah, goodness yeah. Gracious. Yep.
Wow, I forgot he was in that. Okay.
Yeah, he plays the uncle. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's such a good movie, man.
Yeah, the werewolf in that is bonkers. It just
it was
the guy in a
not
suit.
Done very well. That's no, right, not done very well.
But still, again, it was, you know, 1980, that was 1985 as well, man. 1985 had some bonkers.
They're rocking it, man. They're rocking it and doing it.
Well, thanks, Jeff. That was a fun ride down memory lane, and hopefully you got some I need to watch Megaforce, you need to watch better Off Dead, and hopefully whoever's listening can maybe fire up one of these and check it out and go back to 1980s and just see some bonkers movies.
Yes. Yeah, get some joy back in your life.
Exactly. These will bring some joy back to your life, I guarantee it. Or they'll make you terrified. I don't know which one.
That's right. Or make you go, what?
What the heck? Why does this guy have a big smoke grenade going off on his motorcycle?
He can't even see. Why are they all wearing gold spandex?
Motorcycles that can fly.
Like, it doesn't make any sense. Oh, man.
That's why awesome. I love that.
Well, thanks for having me, Lee. Yeah, it was a super pleasure again. I love coming on your show.
Yeah.
It's always awesome.
Thanks again. Where can the listeners find you at?
So obviously, like we've said, I'm on co-host on Make Eternia Great Again. So you can find us on MakeEterniaGreatAgain.com, where it is a He-Man and She-Ra themed podcast where we talk everything Masters of the Universe.
Yes.
And just recently I launched another podcast called Tire Kicker, and Tire Kicker is a podcast where it's basically just everything about cars. And so the premise behind that is kind of like a covert nerd kind of car podcast. And so basically what we do is we like to talk about the obscure 80s cars. We do talk about some of the newer stuff as well. Like we talked about the C8 Corvette and some other things like that. So obviously cars are a huge passion of mine, and so I thought, why not start something up with a couple of my other friends and stuff like that. So we go real deep on that, and it's a super, super fun podcast. We don't take ourselves serious at all. We're definitely not what would you call it, experts by any means, but it's just like a lot of our fans, they say like what they like about the show is it just seems like it's like three dudes in their garage talking about cars, and that's what it is. And it's just super fun. So but yep, that's where you can check us out. So look up Tire Kicker. We don't actually have a .com yet, but you have to find us. I think it's podbean.com/tirekickermedia, I think is what it is. Or you can just Google Tire Kicker Media. You can find us on Facebook and stuff like that as well. So we have a pretty active Facebook page on there that's got a lot of traffic and stuff, and it's super fun. We share a lot of funny memes and stuff. So
yes, you do. I've seen some of them. I'll put a link in the show notes so people can find you. You need to do great. A Megaforce episode.
Oh, we should. Oh, we totally should. That'd be great. We'll do like a live watch. That's what we'll do.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be hilarious.
That would be great.
Cool. Well, yeah, thanks, Jeff. And yeah, go to covertnerd.net. I'll have links for everything in the show notes. And we'll look out for us. We'll probably do another episode, Jeff. We'll find some other wonky or fun thing to talk about from the past.
Absolutely. Sounds like fun. I can't wait.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff is such a good guy. I highly recommend you check out his podcast and also let him know what you think about this episode as well. Again, go to covertnerd.net for all the different ways you can get in touch with me. You can subscribe, check out past episodes. You can also make suggestions on some ideas for future podcasts. And again, as always, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. And until next time, nerd it up.